Blog Talk Radio.
CagedJunkies.com. My name is Bob Carson. With you here tonight, as always, 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. Let me tell you what we've got going on here tonight. We have a great show, as always. We're going to be leading off with Mark Pavlich, MFC president. No stranger to the MMA world, one of the most passionate promoters, truly loves MMA. He's going to be on to talk about the upcoming MFC event, which is taking place May 10th. You know, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, we had Smolino Rama on the show, this hot new heavyweight that is fighting for Mark Pavlich, and it was a very, very interesting fight. He's taking on Chris Barnett for the heavyweight championship, and we're going to get Mark's thoughts about that. And also, I got to tell you, yesterday, a bit of surprise here, Monty Cox, who we've had on the show, he's been on the show several times, longtime MMA promoter. He started out as, I believe, a newspaper editor or writer before he got into the MMA industry, manager of many fighters. He made a derogatory comment about Mark Pavlich, and I want to get Pavlich's take on that. I don't know. I mean, I asked Monty to elaborate on what why he thought the way he did of Mark Pavlich, and he didn't respond. So, I want to get Mark Pavlich's thoughts on that, and perhaps maybe on some later date we can get Monty on the show. He's been on the show several times before in the past, and we can find out what the situation here's here. And then after that, we will be speaking with Dan Quinn. Well, I already spoke to him on April the 25th. Dan, of course, is still incarcerated at the Sacramento County Jail, and he's awaiting trial. And we had about a 20-minute update with Dan Quinn, and you're going to find out what's going on with Dan. Some people are still challenging Dan. You know, there are so many people out there that have gravitated towards my Facebook page and are really challenging Dan, even though they know that he's locked up. They are insisting that Dan is ducking them and this and that. And we managed to ask him about some of that. And it should be a really, really fun interview. It really should. So we've got that coming up. And I want to just tell you quickly about my friend Justin Ray Harvey. He has a new YouTube video. You could see me. I look so bad on this YouTube video. Justin Ray Harvey, it's youtube.com/FrankDukesFan. And you'll see a video that I recorded with Justin Ray Harvey where I'm just laying in my bed. And I look like I'm dead. It's just it's really funny. I look like Paul Bearer. Remember the late Paul Bearer, a.k.a. William Moody, who passed away not too long ago? Well, I'm sort of reminiscent of him. I look a little bit like the long-lost son of Paul Bearer. And we talked about what annoys Bob Carson. And there's a lot of things that annoy me. I go over some pet peeves, and it's worth checking out for sure. You can view that video at youtube.com/FrankDukesFan. That is Justin Ray Harvey, our good friend, his Facebook page, and what she's going to be doing, YouTube videos. Now, that's something that I've thought about for a little while, doing YouTube videos. You know, I probably would do some of my political stuff on YouTube. as opposed to the MMA stuff, because there's a huge market for that. There's a guy named Lee Camp who does phenomenal YouTube videos. He's actually a pretty good friend of mine. And he has just almost, I mean, he's gotten a tremendous amount of popularity due to his YouTube videos, in which he does basic political rants with, you know, about a lot of different things. And it makes for very, very entertaining material. And it should be interesting. So I'll keep you posted if I decide to do anything like that in the future, okay? But I am considering it. I really am, because YouTube videos are fun. They really are. You know, look at what it's done for Dan. I mean, the amount of popularity that Dan has experienced as a result of his YouTube videos. And still to this day, you have people challenging Dan. People just cannot get Dan outside of their head. It's really, really fascinating. It really is. But we're going to play you after Mark Pavlich phones in. And Dan sounds great. He really does. The last time we spoke to Dan before this, he was a little bit concerned about some of the attempts on his life. He seemed a little, you know, distressed. But now Dan sounded very, very good. And I'm very, very proud of that, because I don't want to see anything happen to Dan. I wish him all the best. I really do. So that's coming up. A lot of people just are interested, want to know what's going on. And we do the best we can to try to, you know, keep up with Dan and try to keep you informed with what's going on with Dan Quinn. All right. We just had the UFC in New Jersey. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to this event, and I don't think I would have had I been free of work, because obviously the press pass situation is difficult. Zuffa is very restrictive about who they offer press passes to, and I could almost guarantee you that, first of all, I don't even know if I'd be able to find out how to submit some sort of press application to them. But second of all, I can almost guarantee you that they wouldn't grant me a press pass, probably for a few different reasons, but nonetheless, you know, the result is the same. I wouldn't be able to go to a UFC event. Just on a side note, I had a coworker of mine that actually went to this UFC event, and he works as a compliance officer. And so his job is to just check IDs, make sure that people that are buying alcohol are of legal age. And, you know, he's undercover. And if you have ever been to an MMA event, some of the people there are basically, I've been to dozens of MMA events, covered them, fought of them. They're just a bunch of meatheads. A lot of these guys are drunk meatheads looking for fights. And it's not a real pleasant environment. It really isn't. I mean, I remember I went the last MMA event I went to was probably when Fedor lost to Bigfoot, and that was at the Izod Center in 2010, I want to say, or maybe 2011 in February. And it was just a ruckus crowd, people throwing stuff into the cage. It wasn't a very, very family friendly environment. I had one guy friggin', you know, practically bump into me outside. Just a bunch of morons. Everybody just tries to act tough. There's just too much testosterone in the air. And my buddy, he wasn't familiar with the UFC. He knows that I have a radio show, and he knows that I'm involved with MMA, but this is the first time that he actually saw an event, and he did get to watch the event when there wasn't people online trying to buy alcohol. And he said that Sarah McMahon, at the end of the event, actually tried to go into a bar, and it was closed. And he had to tell Sarah McMahon that, unfortunately, the bar was closed. And it was just kind of interesting, because he didn't realize, hey, who's this girl? Wait a minute, I think she's one of the fighters and whatnot. And, you know, Sarah McMahon, I actually had an opportunity to meet her in Florida in 2009 at the U.S. Grappling Championships. And she's actually a very, very nice person. She really is. Very, very pleasant to talk to. She is a mother. She's had a very, very traumatic past. She was involved in a car accident that killed her fiancé, who was a wrestler. The car rolled over and he was killed. Before that, her brother was murdered. He was a wrestler. And so she's kind of had a lot of adversity in her life. And, you know, now she's fighting. She's undefeated. And there's a good chance that she'll wind up fighting Ronda Rousey. And I think she has a decent chance to win. It's good that she was able to finish her last opponent because most of her fights, if I'm not mistaken, have gone to a decision. I would like to see her start to improve her striking and maybe improve some of her submission games. Although she knows submissions, she's won many, many grappling tournaments, so she knows what to do on the ground. But I like to see fighters evolve, and I like to see fighters finish other fighters. And there's a good chance that she'll wind up fighting Ronda, which will be two Olympic athletes undefeated in MMA fighting. And I think that's very, very interesting. It really is. And so that was just a little anecdote that I was exposed to from the past UFC. It was just a very, very weird card. It really was. You had a lot of mishaps. The New Jersey Athletic Commission looked terrible. The first of all, the John Volante fight was just the referee decision was just absolutely horrible. It really was. That fight should have been stopped momentarily. Okay. And then if the fighter could not continue, then the fight gets stopped and they go to a technical decision. What happened was he thought it was the result of a punch, and then he didn't give the fighter. First of all, he didn't see the eye poke. You know, what was with the lack of refereeing there, where each eye poke, I mean, he had several eye pokes during the course of this event that wasn't seen. The referee had no idea what was going on, and it was just, you know, somebody could get hurt in there. You could have a mishap, and that's exactly what happened in the John Volante Ovince fight, where the referee, Kevin Mulhall, didn't see the poke. He stops the fight. He asks him if he can continue. See, he says no, and then he stops the fight. When in actuality, he should have given, it was an accidental foul, if I'm not mistaken, he should have given him 5 minutes to recover, and then whatever the allotted amount of time is, and then go from there. And then if he can't continue, then you go to the scorecards. But it was bad, a bad decision. It also robbed Volante a chance to potentially win the fight. It was a close fight at that point. It was, and Volante could have won that round. And then in the main event, you had referee Keith Peterson, who, in my opinion, prematurely stopped the fight. This is an arguable call. I understand that. You can, it happens all the time. But I don't think Sona was too hurt. I think it was just a few shots, a flurry, if you would. But Sona wasn't out, and they stopped the fight, in my opinion, prematurely. I think there really has to be rule changes. I don't know about the fingerless gloves. I don't know what they're going to be able to do. If they may be able to design a glove that could cover the fingers and ensure that there's no eye poking, but it's going to be difficult with the grappling nature of mixed martial arts. You know, I mean, you have to use your fingers to grapple. And so it is going to be a challenge, but I don't know. It just overall it seemed like a very, very bad card, a lot of mishaps. Okay, and I wasn't the only fight that I really enjoyed was the Jim Miller versus Pat Healy fight. I was really surprised by that. I didn't think Healy would be able to finish him, But you know what? Pat Healy is a very, very good fighter, and he's a big fighter for that weight class. And it's going to be interesting to see how he stacks up in that division. I'm a little disappointed in Pat Healy because I used to be actually pretty, I guess, not close with him, but I used to be in more contact with him. And he used to be on the show a lot, and now I can't get him on the show. I haven't received any correspondence back from him, but I'd love to get Pat Healy on the show. Still a young guy at the age of 29, and he's someone who previously fought in the UFC, went to Strikeforce, lost a very, very close fight where I believe he was submitted by Josh Thompson. And Josh Thompson, who the week before fought Benson Henderson, I didn't actually see that fight, but from my understanding, it was an extremely close decision in which Josh Thompson lost by split decision. So that was really the only fight that I enjoyed seeing. All the other fights were, I guess, subpar. I mean, I don't think anybody was really looking forward to seeing Michael Bisping fight Alan Belcher. Okay, but again, there was another fight that ended with an eye poke, and there's nothing the referee could have done about that. Thankfully, he saw it right away, and he stopped it, if my recollection serves me correctly. But what's something interesting is Dan Henderson actually criticized Michael Bisping for his eye poke, and when Dan Henderson fought Rich Franklin, Rich Franklin had to have surgery after Dan Henderson's eye poke. In fact, Rich Franklin actually was missing part of his eye due to that eye poke, and that was just a real horrific event. And now, speaking of Rich Franklin, he's set to make his return sometime in 2013, although who knows how long he has left. We really don't know. But anyway, Mark Pavlich is supposed to call, and I just emailed one of his staff members. I don't know if there was a mix-up or what. I'm still trying to find out what's going on because we have a lot to ask Mark, especially about the upcoming MFC, in which the main event really is Smolino Rama versus Chris Barnett. And we had Smolino on the show about a week and a half ago, two weeks ago. And this is going to be an interesting fight. It really is, because both these guys are relatively the same in terms of their records, although Smolino is I would have to give the edge to Smolino because he has more wins by knockout, and he seems to be a more dangerous fighter, and Chris Barnett hasn't fought in a long time. So you know, you have to think, is there going to be ring rust there, so on and so forth. But I don't know. If we don't hear from Mark within another 10 minutes or so, I'll probably wind up playing you the Dan Quinn update. We have Justin Ray Harvey on the show right now. Justin.
Hey, Bob. How's it going, brother?
Good. I was just telling people about the YouTube video, and thank you for calling. This really is perfect timing here. I was just telling people about your YouTube video channel and the video that you and I made earlier today. And, you know, tell us a little bit about that. It was very, very fun.
Oh, yeah. We talked a little bit about Paul Bear and what really gets on Bob's nerve. The purpose of this segment is to really get to know who Bob Parson is behind the microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately for the viewers at home, this was a video chat, so the viewers got to see me in, I guess, intimate form, so to speak, which I don't care. Listen, you know, I'm one of these guys, I don't care. When I went over to Dan Quinn's house, when I was training with Dan, I took my shirt off. I stripped down to my boxer shorts when I was allowing myself to be weighed, and Dan Quinn actually put the video up. I mean, Dan would record. I don't care. You know, the one thing I won't do is take off my boxers, because then I'd have to just really get too intimate there. But overall, you know, I don't care what people see me in.
Could you see that video on YouTube circulating?
Well, you know what, Justin, you were in intimate form too. I mean, you had your shirt off and everything like that. I mean, hey, what do you expect? It's, you know, I don't know what it's like down where you are, but over here it's hot. It's freaking hot in my place.
It's summertime here, so yeah, I mean, it is. And you know, now that we're switching to video, you forget it's not just audio, you know.
That's right. You know, I'm not one of these guys that likes to dress up, and you'll see some of the people that do these talk shows via webcast, they like to dress up, they wear a suit and tie. I don't I'm not getting into that, but you know, it was really fun, and I encourage everybody to check it out. Justin's going to be doing a weekly show, and I'll be doing it as well. We're going to do these segments. And I'm sure Justin will have a lot of other additional material for the folks out there. By the way, I looked it up. His Paul Bearer's real name was William Moody.
Wow. Well, we were close when we were trying to figure it out.
I think Percy was one of his stage names, one of his character names.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, but and Paul Bearer actually owned a chain of funeral homes in Alabama, and so you know, he probably died a wealthy man. One of the things about Paul Bearer, we're this is obviously an MMA show, but we're waiting. We're going to see if Mark Pavlich calls in. We don't know. He's supposed to join us at the top of the hour, but so we're just kind of just going all around here, but. One of the good things about Paul Bearer is he really noted the lack of managers in professional wrestling now. There's just no such thing as managers anymore. I mean, you've got a few guys here and there, but that is just completely went out the wayside. And I think that's really unfortunate because wrestlers, the as Eddie Goldman would say, the fake pro wrestling leagues need good managers to sell their athletes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a tragic loss for, you know, the wrestling world.
Yeah, and it's just it's par for the course because so many. I mean, he had weight problems. There's just no question about that. Paul Bearer actually had a gastric bypass surgery. He had all many different problems associated with. Him being very heavy, he wasn't that tall of a guy. He was about 5'10" or so, and I believe at one point he tried to make it as a professional wrestler, and he couldn't make it. But he made it certainly as a manager, and like I said, he has a website. I believe you can go to his website and check out some of the pictures that he has with some of the people he's worked with over the years. And whatnot.
Absolutely, because nowadays a manager like Paul Bearer is hard to come by. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I don't watch WWE. I don't have a television. Occasionally I'll read stuff about what they're doing, and I'll hear about the pay-per-views from coworkers. I know it's still very, very popular. Recently we had WrestleMania here in New Jersey, and I didn't get a chance to see it, but I saw some of the pictures of the stage and the you know, the Statue of Liberty, and it was real, and it was a really an elaborate setup, and so I'm somewhat familiar with what's going on, but not really, but you know, there I don't think there's any managers out there, and there's, you know, there's not that many characters. I want to see more characters. I want to see better storylines and whatnot. And I don't know. But
yeah, Bob, I wanted to ask you about a topic, actually, since we're kind of just going all over the place here.
Yeah.
That I didn't get a chance to today. There's been a lot of circulation going around on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook about a teacher that worked at a religious school that got fired because they found out she was gay. What's your thoughts?
I think that's unfortunate, and I think I've spoken about this on my political show, not this particular incident, but you know, gays and the civil rights aspect, and we have to recognize too that gay people in America can legally be discriminated against. I think something like in close to 24 states, and I'm not sure the exact numbers, but a person can be legally fired if they're gay. They can be legally discriminated against by the banks if they're gay. And there's all these different things that states can do to gay citizens because of their sexuality, and that's wrong. And recently, you know, yesterday, it's funny you mentioned this. You had this NBA player that came out as being gay, and by and large, the media and everybody has reacted positively because the stigmatization of being gay in America doesn't exist. In other words, the polls show that we have become more and more accepting of gay marriage. There's no question about that. And therefore, the opposition to gay marriage, which largely falls upon, largely is based out of religion, is sort of fading. And there's no question about this. I mean, this is not really an opinion. It's Americans have evolved on this issue. And now you're at a point where even the Republican Party, most likely, some people have said that in 2016, when they have their nomination, there's a good chance that the person who's nominated could be pro-gay. So it shows you just how accepting we are of gay people out there. And in terms of rights, you have 10 states now in America that have legalized gay marriage. The Supreme Court is going to rule on this sometime later on this summer about a case that involved Proposition 8 in California in which a gay woman is suing because she had to pay an estate tax that she would have otherwise wouldn't have had to pay if she were married to a man, and that's discriminatory, she's arguing. And then once I think most people agree that the Supreme Court is going to say that is unconstitutional and therefore allow gay marriage to take place in California, which would really open the door for gay marriage to be legalized in other states because people would sue in other states that do not have the same inheritance rights as, you know, people in other states. It's going to become a state rights issue, and then ultimately gay marriage is going to be legal and it's going to be allowed by the Supreme Court, and you're going to see it everywhere. So, you know, they are getting more rights. I don't think a person should be fired based on their sexuality. But I will say this, though, and this is just me speaking honestly, and I think that I have the moral majority on this opinion here. Even though, again, I'm for gay rights, I think that they should not be discriminated against. I think that the fact that you have NBA basketball players coming out as gay, that being newsworthy is in itself a sign of how much further we have to go on this issue. I'm uncomfortable with seeing two gay guys kiss in public, and I'm uncomfortable with seeing two gay guys holding hands. And I don't think there's anything wrong with me for being uncomfortable. I think the average person out there, I mean, if you talk to them, you know, outside of a poll, or you talk to them behind the scenes and off the record, they say, yeah, you know, I'm uncomfortable about seeing two guys holding hands. It is odd. It's awkward. It's not normal behavior. It's not that there's anything wrong with it, but we're uncomfortable with that. And that doesn't make me a bigot. It doesn't make me a bad person. It just makes me an honest person. You know, I mean, are you, if you take your child out to a public place and see two guys holding hands or two guys kissing, you're going to tell me that there's not a part of you that says, that's weird, you know, or there's not a part of you that makes you uncomfortable? That's absolutely ridiculous.
Exactly. It's like, even with gay adoption, my only problem with that is, like, you know, it would be hard on the child growing up because they would get teased and made fun of at school, and, you know, it's just, it would just be terrible.
Well, you know, I mean, look, there's a lot of research that goes into that, and if there's no alternative, if there's no family, if a gay couple is looking to adopt a child, I have no problem with that. But like I said, it would be odd. I mean, there's no question about that. And I'll give you an example here, and I could tell you it's the talk of the place I work. I work at a place where we have a new employee now who nobody knows whether it's nobody knows whether this person is a male or a female. Okay, we believe they are a female that is attempting to become a male because she still identifies herself as a female, but she has no breasts, and we were told that she's actually going to be trying to convert to a male. And I don't know, I was told by management about that. And what she does is she uses the male bathroom, okay? And now everybody in the place where I work is uncomfortable. It is literally the talk of the place. And they're uncomfortable with it because, you know, they're technically going into the bathroom with a woman. Now, the thing is that there's three bathrooms there. There's a family bathroom, which everybody can go into. A male or female, a child can go into the family bathroom. And then you have one bathroom that's designated for males and another bathroom that's designated for females. And so everybody's uncomfortable with this. People are complaining. People are just like, you know, left and right. And we went to corporate office, and corporate office says in the state of New Jersey, someone who's trying to be a male or female that's converting to the opposite sex has the right to go into basically whatever bathroom they want to. They can go if they're a female trying to become a male, they can go into the male bathroom, and if they're a male trying to become a female, they can go into the female bathroom. And it's legal, and you can't say anything. And it's a very, very sensitive topic because it's a human resources nightmare. I mean, I have a master's degree in human resources. I've studied human resources for the past 2 years, and this is a nightmare for everybody. But nonetheless, even though nobody's talking about it publicly, everybody's talking about it off the record. Everybody's upset by this. Everybody is uncomfortable. And that is existent in the real world. This is a real-world reaction to a very, very weird situation. Now, me, personally, I don't care either way. I mean, there is a part of me that thinks it's weird, but if I see, you know, this person in a male bathroom, which I have before, I'll just walk right by and do what I have to do. But I'm more, you know, kind of passive on this issue. I know people that are right about to throw this person out of the bathroom, you know? And so this is what happens here. And again, it's, you know, this person's a nice person. They're not, you know, they're not mean or trying to, you know, I don't know what the psychology is behind this. They're, you know, they carry themselves reasonably well in terms of being respectful and whatnot. But this is something that everybody in the store has to grapple with. And then you look at the customers and the customers are like, you know, what's going on here? So the point is that it's natural for people to sort of look at this and question this. And it's not – I don't think there's ever going to become a point in America where you look at a gay couple, a gay man in public the same as a heterosexual couple.
I don't see that happening in our lifetime, Bob.
Yeah, and that's you know, it's not – you know, there are some similarities to the civil rights movement, and it is a civil rights issue when you have one set of standards for, you know, one group of people and another set of standards for another group of people. But it's not in a sense because this is behavior oriented. You know, African Americans were discriminated upon based on their race, you know, something that they didn't control. It was based on racial prejudice. We had Jim Crow laws in the South, which, you know, created a separate class of people. We had restrictions on African Americans, and still to this day, African Americans are held back in many respects because of our laws and because of prejudices that still exist. But it's not the same thing, because marriage and sexuality is a behavior. It's behavior oriented, and it has nothing to do with, you know, you can make an argument that they were born like that, it's who they are. You can make an argument that they developed into that. Nobody's going to really solve that question.
Yeah, I mean, you can do all the research you want online or whatever. You can talk to whoever you want, but really, there is no way to get to the surface of the truth on that question.
No. So that's my thoughts on that. I just think that nobody should lose their job because of their sexuality, and she probably has, if it's determined that she was fired based on her sexuality, she may have protections depending upon, what'd you say, this is in Georgia?
I think it was in Georgia, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly, but I'll have to go back and look sometime.
Yeah, I mean, she may have protections afforded by her because, you know, in certain states it violates the Equal Opportunity Clause. It violates some laws that are put on the books, and so, you know, she may be entitled to some protection there and some legal action. But that's my take on this. I don't think Mark Pavlich is going to call in today. I wasn't able to hear back from MFC. This is a very, very weird. I hope that Mark is okay. Actually, you know what? Yep, we have Mark on the line right now. Justin, you want to hold on, or you want me to come back to you?
Actually, I'll just hold on, Bob. So.
No problem. Without further ado, let's go to Mark Pavlich. I believe we have him on the line. Mark, you there?
I'm here, brother. What's shaking, man?
Hey, man, it's good to talk to you. Good to talk to you. Got a lot to talk about. We're very pleased to have you back on the show. I'm guessing that you feel energized and upbeat, as you always seem to be.
Yeah, I'm a little more energized than usual, though, but with more of a cynical mindset for the show coming up, because what I'm delivering this on May 10th to all the MMA fans out there that are going to tune in on Access Television is that once and for all, you're going to understand what real MMA is. And I think people are losing track of that now. See, you know what the MFC brings? It's not MMA. We bring fighting. We bring fighting back to MMA. And that's what we're missing in this day and age. And that's what's going to happen on May 10th.
That's awesome. And we're going to talk all about it. I hope that you're ready, because we have a lot of questions to ask you. But first, I want to talk to you about Monty Cox. Yesterday, it was weird. We posted that you were coming on the show. And we also have Dan Quinn coming up in the second hour. We recorded an interview with Dan. And Monty Cox posted, oh, great, you have one guy in jail and you have another guy that should be in jail. Of course, he's referring to you. What is up with that? I tried to get a response from Monty, tried to ask him, you know, do you have a problem with Pavlich? He didn't respond. So, you know, what's your response to that? Do you have any type of history with Monty Cox?
We used to not get along, and I don't know why he would talk like that, but if Monty has a problem with me, he can call me or he can come to my house and knock on my front door and he'll find out what happens, right? So the bottom line is Monty and I, to my knowledge, we get along. I don't know if he's just trying to be a smartass or what he's trying to do, but I'm not sure. Maybe he's trying to draw some attention to himself with me, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted I wasn't sure if something happened, you know, recently between you two, so I just kind of wanted to...
We get along fine, to my knowledge. But like I said, man, in my world, brother, one day people love me, one day they hate me. I can't determine what people say about me anymore. And to be honest with you, I don't care anymore either. You know, it's like when you run a business like me for 14 years and run it down the line completely straight, people are going to say what they're going to say, right? And I can't stop them from saying it. And, to be honest with you, I can't even get mad about it anymore, right? That's just the way – that's the nature of who I am and what I do.
All right, let's talk about the next MFC card right out of the gate. We've got some familiar faces, on this card, but I also got a couple of fighters I'm not so familiar with, so I want to cover all the main matchups. We've got the top matchup, Chris Barnett versus Smiljan Rama. I want to talk specifically about Rama for a second here, but what about in a moment, actually, but Chris Barnett, I know that Beast Boy has a pretty good record, has some wins over some solid fighters in the XFC promotion. What is it that made you want to bring him to the MFC and set him up with this fight?
Because I saw something in Barnett that people don't see. I mean, this guy is, you know, he's never been stopped in a fight. His record's 7-1, and he's a guy that played Division I football, and he's also extremely athletic, right? I saw him after a fight one time do a backflip into the splits at 265 pounds. And then he did like a breakdancing spin on his back, and I was like, uh-oh. You know, this I just love athleticism in people, right? And he knows how to fight. And he's a guy that I'm really excited about bringing in the MFC.
Yeah, he has a Taekwondo background, and he kind of surprises me based on his appearance. He looks like a thick and strong Daniel Cormier type.
Very similar, right? And at the same time as Barnett, he's been kind of stuck in contract stuff with other shows. And at one time, you know, he was ranked very high in the world. And what happened was on the outstake of it, you know, he was tied up in contract stuff. That's why people haven't heard of him lately. And now I relaunched his career, and, he's just a fantastic fighter.
Yeah, I expect that Beast Boy will be looking to make an impression, and it won't be sort of the fight that we saw between Mir and Cormier. But, you know, the MFC ring, it doesn't exactly favor guys who want to push their opponents into the ropes all night.
No, it doesn't, right? And that's hence why I'm always staying in a ring, and I have for, you know, 14 years. You know, it's just something that I've always thought pushes the fight more than a cage does, but that's a whole separate argument with people, and they're going to think what they think, but the MFC is going to be in a ring. That's just the way it's always going to be.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit more about one of the most exciting and frankly frightening fighters in the MFC right now, Smiljan Rama. We actually had him on the show very recently, but I have to admit that I felt I didn't bring the full spectrum of my game to that interview. I tried to maintain a high standard as possible, but so hopefully we can really discuss Smiljan here. He's a scary fighter. The way he came out and fought against Mike Hackert, who was coming off that big win over Tim Haig himself, was really an eye-opener. Rama just came in and blasted Hackert out, and he's got several knockouts to his resume there. You must be pretty excited about booking future matchups with Smiljan and them.
Well, I love this kid, and the reason why I love him is because he has no fear of making mistakes, and I think that's what a lot of fighters have in this day and age. They're scared to fail, and I don't think that enters his mind. I think all he cares about is winning. And no one's got out of the first round with the guy. You know what I mean? So he's a cat that is going to be extremely scary come May 10th. And, I think most people, because, you know, Rama's from Canada, originally from Albania, I think that people they're going to put Barnett as the favorite. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of a scary line on that because, you know, Rama, no one's came out the first round. And no one's even been competitive with him yet. You know, and that's the scary thought about this guy. He's 21 years old. It's nuts.
Yeah, I was talking about this at the top of the show. I actually think that Smiljan would be the favorite here because he's fought more recently. Chris Barnett is, I think the last time he fought was 2011. So that's got to make him a little bit of an underdog.
I agree, right? But like I said, it's kind of that, you know, that they're both going to step up in competition here. And like I said, I want people to tune in on Access TV on May 10th so they can see for themselves. I mean, that's one thing I'm guaranteeing everybody. Forget about, you know, predictions and the rest of things. All I guarantee every time people see the fight is that they're going to see a fight, right? They're not going to see MMA. They're going to see a fight. And that's what people see more now. That's what's missing out of MMA. You're not watching people fight anymore. You're watching people... I'm not sure what you're watching. I know when you watch our brand of MMA, people are going to fight.
Well, I got to tell you, some guys, going back to Smiljan here, they try to put on the whole fighter aura with tattoos and the shaved head stuff, but Rama really comes across as a legit a badass fighter and a guy and whatnot. You know, I know that... Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say, the thing about Rama that people don't understand is, you could take Rama right now and say, okay, you're going to fight in a ring, and he's going to fight in a ring. You could take Rama and say, you're going to fight in a cage, you're going to fight in a cage. You can tell Rama he's going to fight in a telephone booth, and he's going to fight in a telephone booth. You could say to Rama, there's four guys out in the parking lot right now, and I need your help to come with me, and he's the guy that's going to come with you and clean them up. You understand what I'm saying? There's
yeah.
very few MMA fighters that have that type of aura about themselves. You know, because they'd be in the middle of a parking lot trying to shoot on a guy, a street fight, right? What I'm trying to tell you is a guy like Rama, he can fight in any aspect, anywhere. That's what I'm saying. That's a rarity. That's a big time rarity. He doesn't matter where he is, he can fight.
Yeah, that should be a great fight, Barnett versus Smolina Rama. Like I said, I'm going to have to pick Rama in the fight based on his recent form, but you know, Barnett is still a very, very formidable opponent. As for Mike Hackard, what's next for him?
I'm praying and I'm pleading with his camp that he goes down to 205. I think that's where he's going to make his home, and I think he's going to be extremely dangerous at that. I mean, he's just giving up so much weight to all these fighters. I mean, he fights at the Mike Tyson weight of 220, and it's like, no, you just can't do it anymore. You're fighting guys that are 265, 255, and it's just, I love Mike Hackard. Maybe he's an awesome fighter, but he really has to, like, reevaluate, and I think to have a future in MMA and a future in the MFC, you have to come down to 205.
Yeah, despite the loss, he's still a very, very exciting, fan-friendly fighter, and he seems like a nice guy.
He's an awesome guy.
Yeah, how would you say the MFC heavyweights are shaping up overall? It seems like a good or great deal of them are performing very, very well.
Everybody's performing well, and at the same time, it's being very choosy. You know, we started the heavyweight division, and now we started the 135 division, and we're being extremely selective on who we're signing to our organization. And I'm telling you right now, the research level that we're going through to sign guys has gone to an all-time high. It's a whole other level of how people, you know, get into the MFC. We're receiving more applications, more people wanting to be in the MFC, and I'm really telling people that there's a whole combination of things that I'm concerned with now. One is your finish ratio. How are you finishing fights? Mm-hmm. You know, is the percentage of you finishing fights high? If you go to decision too much, right? I'm not interested in you. What's your stand up fighting look like? What's your ground fighting look like? You know, hey, do you Twitter? Do you Facebook? Do you sell yourself during a fight? Heaven forbid that happens ever, right?
Mm-hmm. You've also got Makai Maromo back after kind of a disappointing title fight performance on his last outing. I don't know specifically what happened, but he got taken down, I think, a lot in the first round, and then he really seemed to be making a big comeback on his feet in the second. Did you get any detail on what happened to him? Did he just gas or get some sort of adrenaline dump or something like that?
Adrenaline dump, right? There's so much hype on him, and there's so much pressure for him to deliver. And he has in the past, and this was one of those fights where a guy named Graham Spencer, who needs to get way more love out there, is a guy that, you know, just he's just very smart, and he's a hardworking kid, and he came and he stole the show, you know, and that's the unfortunate part. Listen, one thing about people don't understand, all these guys are signed with me. I don't care who wins. I love them all the same. But I really, you know, when the guys put their effort in and they win the title, that's it, man. I mean, you can't say nothing. There was no controversy. He stopped them. He submitted them. And, you know, Graham Spencer deserves much more praise than he's getting. And he's a kid that's going to go down to 145. And to be honest with you, I think he can make 135. And he's just going to graduate. I mean, the kid is – I can't wait to have him back in the MFC.
Yeah, I'm looking for him to come back strong in this fight. What sort of a challenge does he face? Kurt Southern – for him. Describe him as a fighter, if you would.
Well, Southern to me is one thing I love about this kid's style is he's a dirty wrestler, right? And
mm-hmm.
He doesn't mind banging. He doesn't, and what I mean by dirty wrestler, he gets up there and he doesn't mind banging it out, standing up. Then he gets in there and he wrestles with you, but he doesn't wrestle and hold you. He wrestles and dumps you, punches you on the ground, picks you up, throws you around a little bit, punches you out a little bit. He's not a dry hump wrestler. And that's what I love about this guy. And, I mean, he was beating for 2.5 rounds Jonathan Novais, who's with the MFC 155, or who's world Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion. He was pounding him. He was just beating him from pillar to post. And finally, he stayed a little bit too long on the ground, and Novais took his arm off and brought it home with him to Chicago. you know? and so, that's the what you're dealing with here in the MFC. I mean, the 155 division in our organization is just mega exciting. And then the 185 division, too, as well, is very, you know, very well endowed, you know, that division.
Another great fight you've got is veteran Jay Silva versus Sam Alvey. And I got to give a shout-out to Alvey because he recently has become a follower of mine on Twitter. And also I realized that apparently his girlfriend won a season of America's Next Top Model.
Yeah, she's an awesome chick, man. She's really cool. And she actually corners him, which is unbelievable. But, and you know what's funny? I watched her cornering, and I was just shocked on her ability to game plan and her ability for coaching. It was absolutely shocking, and it was phenomenal. She really knows what she's talking about. She's not just a beautiful face. And on top of it, she's extremely pregnant right now. So they're going to have their first child as we speak. You know, it's coming up very soon. And, you know, they're just the combination of the two is awesome. They're really nice people, and I'm really proud to have them both in the MFC.
Yeah, his last fight was against Elvis, and she, like you said, she actually seemed like a very solid corner woman and gave him very good advice. And I feel like Elvis was just able to be more consistent over the duration of that fight, you know?
Yeah, and then, you know, it's funny, you know, I thought that Elvis brought the fight, and, you know, Elvis, you know, did enough to win the fight, you know, but... I mean, the fans love the fight because that's the style of fighters. That's why I put LV together with Jay Silva, because I know it's going to be a mess. I know they're going to get in there and they're going to beat the hell out of each other, and everybody at home and everybody in the arena is going to love it.
Yeah, absolutely. He hits hard, and so does Jay Silva. So, you know, and Jay Silva also at times could be considered inconsistent, but he's beaten some good fighters. And he makes things very exciting, win, lose, or draw, you know?
Yeah, Jay's either, like, phenomenal or he's terrible. There's no in-between, you know what I mean? It's like, it comes and he can be, on any given day, you could put that guy, no joke, you could put that guy up against Anderson Silva and he's got a shot. Or you could put that guy up against, like, Wes Swarford, a guy last fight. He was beating Wes Swarford, putting it on him, and he got lazy and he got caught, and that was the end of the fight, you know? And it's like... that can happen to him. And then he can go against a guy like Kendall Grove and choke him out unconscious. That's the guy you're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's fought some of the guys that have done pretty well in the UFC as well, you know. So anything really could happen with this guy. And then you've got some other fights on the two fighters I'm not really familiar with are Ryan Benoit and Anthony Berchek.
And you know what's funny? Those two kids right there, man, if that's not going to be one of the more exciting 135-pound fights people ever see in their life, trust me when I tell you this. I was so calculating when signing Berchek and Benoit that you know what the shame is? That they're actually fighting each other first. I would have preferred they both fought other people and then the show after fought for the title, the winner of those fights, you know, because I just love the way they fight, both of them. And Berchek, heaven forbid, the guy knows how to sell a fight on top of not just knowing how to fight.
Now let's talk about, and this is taking place May 10th. We're going to give out some of the more particulars in a little while, but I want to talk about the landscape of MMA right now. I really appreciate getting your perspective on some of the going-ons in this exciting sport. The ladies have also had great fights on UFC shows recently. Sarah McMahon blew her opponent you know, due to her wrestling, almost like one of Roy Nelson's unspectacular but completely one-sided Ultimate Fighter matchups, although Sarah is sporting a somewhat leaner physique. Is there any chance of MFC women's division in the future?
No. It's not going to happen. Like, you know, it's funny. I say no because I just don't like watching females fight each other. That has nothing to do with that. I have the utmost respect for these female athletes. I think they're phenomenal. I think what they do, and they work hard. I have nothing against them whatsoever. It's just never going to happen in the MFC.
Well, you know, one of the things is there are less women fighting at the moment and fewer active weight divisions. Do you see the UFC attempting to monopolize talent in that class now that Dana White is attractive enough to Rousey in order to make female fights where, you know, he was reluctant in the beginning?
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking or what he's doing. So for me, I don't, like I said, I don't see any interest, like, for us. It's like, I don't, I just, you know, it's funny. I've been very, when I kind of say things like, you know, I'm never going to put female MMA, I mean it. It's not a thing against female MMA people. I know Sarah Kaufman very well. I know how hard she works. I think Ronda Rousey's phenomenal. I mean, Carmouche, all those girls, they're awesome, man. So it's nothing to do with that. It's my own thing. I just don't like it, and that's it. You know, it's like, no offense, too, but I love boxing, right? But I watch female boxing, and I don't like it, you know, and that's it. It's like, people watch pin bowling, they love it. Some people hate it, you know, that's just the way it is. It's not a thing against the actual athlete. I'm not a fan of watching them fight.
I know that you've been kind of indifferent to Bellator in the past, but what do you think about the prospects of their Fightmaster show? Will that raise their brand profile, or is the concept too, you know, much of a derivative of what the UFC has already done?
Yeah, I don't know nothing what they're doing. Like, I'm immune to whatever they do. I've never watched their brand of MMA. I've never even had an interest to watch it. So I'm not even trying to be funny. It's just, I really have not. You know, it's just something I don't understand. I don't care to understand. You know, I don't want to watch it. I don't respect them. I just don't. I have nothing positive to say, or even negative to say about them anymore.
Yeah, what about the MFC or an MFC reality show of some sort?
Never. No, I'm never going to do that. I mean, we've been approached before. People want us to do a reality show with our family about the MFC, but they wanted to live in our house and, you know, do that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're not, that's not the family we are. I'll gain attention for the Maximum Fighting Championship some other way. But I really think that the days of the MMA reality show have seen their best days behind them.
Yeah, I mean, we've had 17 seasons of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the Tough Show, and they've tried to change up the format, usually without success. So, you know,
I don't watch that show at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I never watch it. So I watched it the first season, you know, the second season, and then after that, I kind of lost interest in watching it. And, you know, not that I have a great deal of time to watch television, but, you know, on occasion I did watch the Ultimate Fighter show, and now I never watch it.
Yeah, I don't watch it either. I mean, I don't have a television. If I did, I probably wouldn't watch it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what else we have to cover? There's just a lot. Do you think that as a promoter, you're held to a different standard of behavior than other promoters?
You mean me personally?
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, I think, for example, if I'm going to compare promoters, right, I think when you look at Dana, I think most people give him the luxury of doing whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
If, say, for example, if I did the John Jones, Chael Sonnen fight, I would have been crucified. As the MFC owner, Mark Pavlich, I would have been murdered, crucified for even attempting to do to fight like that, because there was no logic, there was no sense to it. Chael wasn't even ranked in the 205 division. He didn't deserve it. And I would have been crucified. Like, I mean, crucified if I tried to do something like that. But it's interesting, you know, Dana tried to sell it to everybody like it was going to be something, and it wasn't. But the point is that, you know, he gets that luxury of owning the largest mixed martial art organization on the planet, so he gets a ton of leeway with his conduct, right? I personally, as being maybe the third biggest or fourth biggest show in the world, I don't get that same luxury. So for me, I'm very careful on wording. You notice I don't use profanity when speaking in interviews, right? Things like that, right? Him, he can do whatever he wants. People think it's normal. They think it's funny. I'm like, well, you know, in any other sport, you don't see owners of organizations speaking that way.
In particular, I've seen a little bit of negative reaction to your description as yourself as a pioneer in MMA. Why do you think that you get heat for referring to yourself as the pioneer in MMA? I mean, or a pioneer in MMA?
I never referred to it myself. People refer to it. I've been in the business 14 years, right? So who else has been in the business 14 years but me and the UFC, right? So that's people referring to it in that manner. I think the number one thing is people want me to bow down, right? And as a person with my character, I can't bow down, regardless if I know the UFC is the biggest show in the world or not. They are. But I'm not going to bow down to anybody. You understand? I wake up every morning trying to be number one in my country, then trying to be number one in the world, which is a very hard goal to do with a show like UFC. But at the same time, is my mentality still doesn't change to be trying to be the best, right? And that's what people don't like. They want to strike that down, but it's never going to happen because I'm never going to change.
I bet if Mike Camp or the guy who did Shark Fights post that they were a pioneer on the underground, nobody would complain. I bet a bunch of people would even probably agree and start trying to kiss up to them. That's just the way I see it. I'm not saying majority or even many MMA fans are ass kissers, but it's obvious that some clearly are.
Yeah, people are, but I mean, you know, it's funny. As time goes on, though, I've been noticing a shift in the atmosphere because we do get a lot of support from a lot of people. We get a ton of support from media, whether it be mainstream or internet. We do. We get a ton. So to me, that's a sign of respect, and I take it that way. And I'm very honored that people, you know, want to interview and want to talk about the Maximum Fighting Championship and what's going on with the organization. And it's been like that for a long time, but Bob, it's starting to increase, and that's something that I really, you know, I'm really happy about. And at the same time, is to me that's a form of respect. The media, right? And that's what matters to me, the fans and the media. These other people that talk around the, you know, in the weeds and are hiding in the bushes, I don't care about those people. I'm immune to it now.
Well, anybody who puts on 40 major shows in a market deserves respect, and who has displayed the longevity that you have deserves a lot of admiration. I mean, I remember a show, the Texas-based Diesel Fighting Championship, that they booked a 22,000-seat arena for their first event, and they falsely advertised Elvis Sidisek as being on the card, which is kind of a weird choice, but it's not easy doing what you do. There's no question about that.
And my favorite part is you always hear people talking about the fighters, the fighters, the fighters. And I think to myself, I do care about the fighters, but at the same time, as you got to care about what I'm doing, because if you don't, then there's no us, and if there's no us, there's no fighting. And that's what people don't understand. It's like, yeah, I have respect for fighters. I've always had an utmost respect for fighters. But at the same time, is, you know, it's great that the fans want to run their mouth about promoters and promotions, but tell me this: I'm the only show in my country that's live on television. I'm also on the largest sport network in Canada. No other MMA show is on the largest. Or I am, right? So what I'm trying to tell people, if I'm not on that network, I'm not on Access TV, and I'm not doing live shows, what are you going to watch?
Right.
Right, that's what I'm saying, right? I'm not asking you to build a bronze statue of us, but I'm saying is, honestly, like, how can you criticize? What people should do more is they should figure out how to support the MFC more. They should figure out how to for more corporate sponsors to come towards the MFC. They should be raising the MFC flag, be proud of the MFC, what it's accomplished, right? Because what people got to get through their head is, I'm them. I'm the guy. I'm you. I don't have billionaire friends that are back in my play. I'm doing this lunch pail style, man. I'm getting up, you know, like you do every morning, right, with your coffee, and I'm putting the grind in, just like you are at home, just like the people are at home. That's what I do every day, and I've been doing it for 15 years, just like you, basically over time. And people at home do the same thing. So how can you hate me? You should embrace me because I am you. Right, I'm the promoter that you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning and answers his phone. I'm the guy at the shows that's out there thanking people for coming to my show. I'm grateful for that. I don't expect that. I don't think I'm owed that. I'm grateful that people are showing up to my shows.
Yeah, exactly. You haven't had a major casino chain bankrolling your earlier events and that certainly helps a lot. To have that type of support is just it gives you that much of an advantage.
Yeah, see, we get small goals, Bob, but for us it's small gains, man. We signed with Access TV and Mark Cuban, man. That was a big gain, you know. We signed with TSN. There's another one, man. But they come spread out, man. This is their grind, you know. And it's like, that's what I don't get, because people should embrace that, right? Because that's how we are. We're that company. We're that little engine that could, man. We're Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, right? That's what people got to put in their head. We're the people that are the ones that, you know, we're down and we don't give up and we don't cancel shows. The MFC's never canceled a show. We moved a show once and we were crucified. crucified. Mm-hmm. But we've never canceled a show in all the years we've been in business. Who could say that in the MMA business?
Do you think that being a confident person bothers some?
Confident? You know, that's another myth, man. I'm not confident. I'm scared of everything. That's what people don't understand. They think it's confident. I'm like, well, I think that's hilarious when people say that. At least you're a confident guy, man. I'm like, confident? I'm scared of everything, man. That's why I am the way I am. I'm scared to fail. I'm scared that the MFC will stop one day. I'm scared that, you know, I'm scared of everything. That's what people don't understand. I don't know. Maybe it comes across as confidence. It's called fear, ladies and gentlemen. I'm scared. I got a show in 10 days, man. I got a few hundred tickets left. I'm scared because I want those tickets gone, right? I want everybody to arrive. I want to be able to sell this fight, but I want to make sure that fans get what they paid for because I'm scared they're not going to like it. You know what I mean? That's who I am.
For those who want to check out the next MFC, and I assure everyone listening that they do, it's on May 10th on the rebranded Access Network. Join the MFC mailing list for direct updates at the website MaximumFighting.com. And, Mark, do you have any other places you want to direct people to, Twitter, Facebook, or?
Yeah, sure. Listen, we're going to play the undercard on Facebook for all the fans out there. So all you beautiful American people that are out there, listen to me. Go to our Facebook like page, Maximum Fighting Championship. It's our like page. You know, that's where you want to go. We're going to play the undercard there for free so everybody can watch it. And then after on Access Television, you can go to our Twitter page, at Maximum Fighting, or my own, of course, at Mark Pavlich.
Perfect, 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 perfect. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate you coming on here regularly to give us the update. You have a wonderful staff that makes it very easy to interview anybody that's fighting on your card, and we really appreciate that. And we wish you the best of luck, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Bob.
Take care. All right, Mark Pavlich of the MFC. Glad to speak to him. We're going to take a brief time out. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be Dan Quinn, recorded from the Sacramento County Jail. You need to show some respect to Dan Quinn. Right back here on Carson's Corner in conjunction with CageJunkies.com. We're back live here on Carson's Corner. You having fun? Can you feel the night? All right, that was Fight to Survive by Stan Bush. I am Bob Carson. This is Carson's Corner. And we're going to play you an update with Dan Quinn. We're going to end the show with this update because it's about 20 minutes long. And before we play the update, I just want to remind you, you could follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/Bob Carson MMA. Actually, friend me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Bob Carson MMA. And don't forget to check out my political show at Blog Talk Radio, the same address that you're listening to right now, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Without further ado, here is Dan Quinn. Enjoy the update and show some respect, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here with Dan Quinn. It is April 25th, 12:13 a.m. Dan, before we start, I have to tell you there was a Gus Walsh on Facebook that is obsessed with challenging you. He wanted me to mention you, mention him to you. What do you think about this Gus Walsh guy?
I think that society has made it so Darwin's world doesn't exist, and pieces of shit with DNA, piece of shit DNA, shits out guys like him, and they hate, and instead of wanting to do something positive, they just try to detract and take away from my TV discovery. You know, I wonder if he even eats pussy and plays the violin. You know what I'm saying? I'll tell you what, Bob. This is to Dennis Rodman and North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Attacking the United States and South Korea and the world with nuclear bombs would actually be national suicide. But attacking America and the global economy with stevia and nature and the fountain of youth that stevia produces would actually equal North Korea as a kind of David with a global chemical Goliath, equaling future billions and even trillions of dollars for North Korea's Kim Jong-un, who grants Dan Quinn political asylum, who immediately uses money to legally attack America's criminal, evil rich, and crooked cops, kind of like Robin Hood, disrupting our economy and giving it back to the masses of the middle class and poor. That 1 pound of China stevia monthly times 3 or 4 months equals vanishing Kim Jong-un and baby fat, magically morphed into a facsimile of Bruce Lee's body. Kim Jong-un adopting the violin technique as the fountain of orgasm for women in his sexual game plan and making women to double and even triple digit orgasm pleasure equals his lean and chiseled face on the cover of Time, Rolling Stone, and even Newsweek in a very good way, shocking and rocking the world. Dennis Rodman and North Korea. Let stevia and water see these two coldly and safely kitchen explode more. Triple size into split H2O natural gas. See man-made toxic killer chemicals floating at the end of the blend. The pure H2O below all that killer toxic soap over 4 months banished 6 breast tumors and 62 pounds of obesity, as well as type 2 diabetes in my good uncle, and magically morphed Madonna 10 to 15 years sexier and Playboy cynical perfect, so exquisitely fast it actually shocks and rocks the world. And a former Trojan and current NFL coach, Russ Pennell, doesn't fuck up. Junior Sal is still alive and excited, and his ex-Trojan teammate, Dan Quinn's stevia discovery, vanishing obesity, diabetes, and even cancer in all islanders, and eventually taking Earth to a global health utopia. Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un. Dan Quinn wagers his life in an experiment to prove that pure H2O equals the fountain of youth. Cancer victim in room A, a sex predator child rapist in room B, a blend of stevia and water, the pure H2O vanishes roommate's cancer into 100% perfect health insanely fast. The floating toxic soap, when liquid clear, crashes room B's sex predator into sickness and death so fast that it proves pure H2O is the same thing as the fountain of youth, or Dan Quinn never sees the metaphorical and literal light of day. Final pure H2O of the fountain of youth for sale, and the fact that humans need approximately 1 gallon of water daily equals a future trillion-dollar industry daily emanating from tiny North Korea that starts replacement corporations for Coke and Pepsi since we don't lease or license them to stevia miracle discovery. Dennis Rodman, North Korea, fat. Michael Jordan and Oprah's money or other benevolent billionaires could easily right now replace the Walmart, the General Motors, and other slave master companies of the world with with Robin Hood type corporations that redistribute 95% of the profit and the wealth to all workers, so everyone has, quote unquote, enough, in effect getting slavery, equaling global socialism, and hopefully saving this planet. With Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un and Madonna and the rest of Hollywood and anyone else wanting to save this planet, a perfect world equals kings and queens who don't stuff and gorge while their poor, starving freaks metaphorically next door. England's quote-unquote white plight, throwing our revolution to America and using the United States by proxy to proverbially hold up and ransom the rest of the planet at the end of a capitalistic and supposedly democratic atomic gun. Dennis Rodman, if Dan Quinn's jets could easily cover black millionaires, running backs, and wide receivers man-to-man on television on NFL Sundays, do you think that my stevia and violin sound of youth and sound of orgasm discoveries would actually have already gone viral in a good way, if not for the evil of Notre Dame and Lou Holtz? Fact, YouTube Dan Quinn's Notre Dame play, realize I'm immediately fired when I hit the sidelines by an insanely bad point-shaving Lucifer Lou Holtz after making that SB-worthy type play. Fact, the ABC or CBS and NBC enforces Notre Dame's and Holtz's gag order equals all responsible in a Hunger Games capital type way for Dan Quinn immediately quitting football and choosing boxing and thereby becoming human, and also equating it to tens of millions of innocent deaths from what stevia so easily cures. That, after winning the 1991 Florida State 201-pound Golden Glove title, Miami PD framed Dan Quinn for an attempted murder on a cop, supposedly yelling, "I have AIDS," and spitting on that punk bitch for the badge, when all I actually said was his mom and dad should have been sterilized, as shit DNA plus shit DNA equals the term of the badge I saw before me. That attempted murder on a cop to cover Miami PD for hurting me and Rodney King in my leg and knee, actually reduced to a misdemeanor trespass, yet Scandal Mentos, Sacramento County Sheriff, and police continually violate my civil rights because it remains on my unofficial record. Sacramento and Scandal Mentos officers warned Nelson and Hernandez, torquing my handcuffed hands behind my back and shredding both shoulders and muscles in a future surgery and litigation, me fantasizing and envisioning using future lawsuit money to fund future Perry's Duogue and to legally attack them and all bad boy cops from North Korea to wherever, suing all rogue and criminal cops and surrounding them with houses and neighbors who hate them and are willing to wreck their own property values and thereby surrounding property values and ensuring in future all their neighbors hate their fucking guns. What do you think about that one, Bob?
Awesome. Dan, listen, I got two questions. Joseph Todorov on Facebook says, when will you get out?
You're legally allowed to protect yourself, okay? How many times have I had my life threatened, Bob?
A lot.
You guys have heard that on YouTube videos that I put up, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay? Threatening to kill me, threatening to put me in a meat grinder. And the fact is, Officer Toy, the guy that actually, told me that it will, quote unquote, pull me over. He actually saw me across the street when I was handcuffed in the back of a car. He looked at me and he said, I was over at your house and raided it. And I thought, this fucking punk bitch is lying to say there's a quote unquote drug deal going on that gave me an excuse to come over and search me. How many people do you think have died from cancer in the United States just since I've been locked up?
You've been locked up almost 9 months now, right? Probably. Maybe close to 100,000, if not more, probably more.
100,000, if not more. I mean, how many people die each and every year from cancer that stevia is so easily cured? And I'll tell you what do you think, Bob? My heart goes out to that young kid that was killed in the Boston tragedy and to everybody that was hurt. But I'll tell you what, does anybody in America have the faintest idea that the drones that were killing supposed Al Qaeda members with in other countries? For bombing people that are innocent daily, aren't we, Bob?
That's correct.
Using drones to kill them?
That's correct. Under Obama, yes.
I mean, people in America have no idea why the rest of the country, or and that the rest of the country, the rest of the world hates our guts. We're not the good guys anymore. Do you think we're the good guys anymore, Bob?
No, absolutely not. And speaking along these lines, UFC fighter Mitch Clark asks, what are your thoughts on Europe's economic situation?
He asked me?
Yes.
He actually asked me something?
Yep.
Okay, what did he ask? Say that again.
What are your thoughts on Europe's economic situation?
I think that the rich from all countries get together in a place near San Francisco called Bohemian Grove. You've heard of it, Bob, right?
No.
You've never heard of Bohemian Grove?
Nope.
It's an ultra-rich enclave where presidents and CEOs of major corporations get together. And I'll tell you what, I talked with a dancer that had been at Bohemian Grove, and I never got the chance to meet her, but oh my God. She told me that she had danced at Bohemian Grove, and she saw people that you see in Time and Newsweek wearing robes, praying to 40-foot stone owl, kissing in sync, you know, acting fucking basically like pagans, all right?
Wow.
And yeah, you know, they crazy shit. And the fact of the matter is, if you're gonna go shopping somewhere, when is the best time to go? When they're having a 50% off sale, correct?
Yes.
Okay, a fire sale, metaphorically. That's what the rich do to this country and around the planet. They do it in cycles, all right? They wait till everybody comes up, and then they'll fucking, they'll I mean, how many people have gone to jail over, basically, instead of using a gun to rob the Wall Street, you know, and the stock market, they used laws that, you know, rich senators that were in their pockets. I mean, no one's gone to jail and they stole, what, a couple $100 billion?
Trillions. I mean, they've stole $13 trillion. I mean, it's an endless amount of money they've stole from us, Dan.
Oh, exactly. And then, you know, what we have, like, $4 or $5 billion that was cash shrink-wrapped over Iraq that just walked away.
That's right. I mean, it's
amazing. But like this, when the authority, okay, whatever the authority is, if they don't have the answer to any laws, basically, it's pandemonium, kind of like it is in here, trying to hear what's going on, right? But if the rich can flaunt laws, get away with basically robbery and in many cases, you know, murder, all right? You know, how many people have been displaced from their jobs and their homes because of the economic situation, and they're starving to death in America? But people, I mean, you know what, Bob? I think that Americans have trouble with, quote unquote, enough. How much is enough? You feel me?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? If I was rich.
1 minute remaining.
Okay, there's 1 minute remaining. Can I call you back, Bob?
Absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. If I was rich, Bob, you know what I'd do? I would scour the ghettos for intelligent young men and women that don't have the money to go to medical school. And what I would do is send them to Cuba. Did you realize that there's a medical school in Cuba that will take anybody that is qualified to go because they want doctors around the planet trying to do good and pay it forward? Are you aware of that?
Yes, just like Che Guevara did. Yes, absolutely. More doctors in Cuba.
Exactly.
Yep.
You know, people don't realize that more Americans have died this year alone by, you know, internal, you know, like gang warfare in city streets than died in the entire Iraq war combined. Isn't that true, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, basically, have you read The Hunger Games yet?
I saw the film. I really was, you know.
Okay, well, you know what? The capital, okay, the bad guys in The Hunger Games, that's America, brother, okay?
Thank you for using IC Solutions.
All right, Dan is going to call back, and I just want to make one point here that Dan was alluding to is the prison population. Did you know that the private prison population, the for-profit companies like Wackenhut and Corrections America or something to that effect, I don't remember the exact name, but one of the major corrections companies out there, they trade stock on Wall Street, and in other words, they make money. The more people that they lock up, the higher their stock prices go. So you know, there's a reason why most of our prisons are filled with so-called drug crimes, which you can make an argument that they're victimless crimes, and that's another debate. But there is an argument to be made that there is a tremendous amount of profit motive in locking people like Dan up. Now you look at China. recently, China scoffed at us for the idea of us lecturing China about human rights when we have more people in prison per capita than China does. And we claim to be the beacon of human rights here in America. It's absolutely ridiculous. The expansion of prison, the privatization of prison, and the privatization of our schools, which is just increasing dramatically, even under President Obama, is a way for them to make money. And so, therefore, someone is benefiting off of people being locked up. Let's go right now to Dan again.
You have a call at no expense to you from an inmate. This call will be recorded and subject to monitoring at any time. Thank you for using IC Solutions.
Dan, you're on a roll, man. You sound great.
Hop Carson.
Hey, what's up, man?
Quinn here.
Yeah, you're on a roll, man. We're recording. You sound great tonight.
Well, you know what? Standing next to me is he's the leader of Zimus, isn't it, Smith?
Yes.
Okay. He is a brother, a gentleman that is extremely intelligent, badass. He actually got challenged in the holy thing downstairs. Some guy threatened to kick his ass and moved on him and Stubbs beat his ass. And now, because Stubbs is a leader of a quote unquote street gang, they're looking at what they want to do, Stubbs. They want to fucking charge you with what? That's with a deadly weapon in his hands.
Yeah,
straight up.
Wow.
I'll tell you what. You know what the rich do, Bob? The rich are attacking. Are attacking the blacks, the poor whites, the Mexicans with laws that are completely fucking unfair. That keep that. I'll tell you what. This bottom line. I could take Snubs. I could take Bryce Taylor, my selling, and a couple other guys that are borderline brilliant. And we could kick Donald Trump's ass on the apprentice. I guarantee it. Okay. If these kids now dead were born to the money that, you know, rich kids had sent to Yale, okay, were born to, the opportunities, they'd be taking over the world in a good way. People don't realize that there's an economic war up against. And they lock it down. Abrams over? Fuck, Abrams over, Bob. Abrams over, all right.
Listen, give me a call with that whenever you can. I'll email you again. My schedule will work something out, Dan. You were great tonight. You sounded great, man.
Okay, you know what? Send me your new address. Okay, so I can go directly to you. It doesn't have to go, you know, third party.
Okay.
And maybe I can write some things, and you can type, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. If I send you some things, can you type them on like your Facebook page?
Sure.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Bob.
Take care, brother. Keep your head up, Dan.
In a heterosexual way. Get together with Riley. Get that keto
yes.
And start drinking it and melt down to prove my miracle, all right?
I've been watching videos of Ross Clifton. And were you there when he fought Ken Shamrock?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I was actually driving down. I got lost. I tried to find it. I got lost. I didn't have direction. I didn't get all fucked up.
Well, you know, I've just been, you know, trying to watch and trying to get motivated to help myself out.
You know what the tragedy is, that the good guy, you know, is something half will survive. And Ross Clifton was one of the best I've ever met. Bottom line, if his hammer wasn't on steroids, Ross Clifton knocked him out. And Ken Shamrock getting on CBS and helping this go global, what a story that would be. What do you think?
I think so. Take care, brother. God bless. Tissue. All right, that was Dan Quinn. Unfortunately, we were cut short here, but we got a good interview out of Dan. And, you know, I'm trying to – I have been watching the Ross Clifton, Ken Shamrock fight. Somebody told me, and I don't want to repeat this. You know, I'm not even going to repeat this, but somebody told me that the fight was fixed. And I actually asked Dan about that a few years ago, and Dan was adamant that Ross would never do that. And I don't know. We may never get to the bottom of that. And, you know, but I interviewed Ross years ago, and he seemed like a really, really good guy, a real good heart. and whatnot. And unfortunately, he died very young, and I'm worried I'm just going to turn up just like him in terms of, you know, that. So we'll see what happens. But this is Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. We're going to take a brief time out here. We will come back, and we will proceed with live programming. Just keep it right here on Carson's Corner.